Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
Hey, this is Annie, and you're listening to Stuff Mom Never Told You. Today, I'm joined by someone whose voice you might recognize, one Tracy V. Wilson, co-host of the podcast Stuff You Missed in History Class. Thank you so much for joining us, Tracy.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. And today we're talking about something we both really enjoy, tabletop gaming.
So that's true.
It's going to be really fun. And a peek behind the scenes, I used to produce and edit a show that Tracy and Holly hosted previously called Pop Stuff.
Yes. Were you our producer when we did the episode that we did about tabletop games way back then?
I was. So we're like coming full circle.
Yeah, we had some shifts in who did what, and I couldn't remember exactly where that fell in the timeline.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I was the producer the entire time of that show. It was really fun to work on, too.
It was. It was a fun deal.
It was. Today, as I mentioned, we are talking about tabletop gaming, and I think it would probably be a good thing to start with a definition. When we say tabletop games, what do we mean? What does that encompass?
I think it encompasses everything that's meant to be played around a table. So it goes from card games to role-playing games to board games to anything that you would get in a group and play around a table. I also know that some people have kind of a more exclusive definition than that, and they only want to include the ones that they think are real games.
Oh, that sounds very similar to like the whole video game debate of like the
exactly.
real gamer.
Exactly. Yeah. It has, sometimes you will talk to folks that they don't want to think that Clue is a tabletop game because you can just buy that at the regular toy store. And I think
what?
That's a silly argument.
I agree. That is very silly. We are a big tabletop game playing office here. We have a tabletop gaming night once a month at work, and a group of us in office, as you've heard me mention before on the show, I think, we are in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and I'm about to Dungeon Master for the first time. Very nervous, very excited. Both.
That's one of the things I'm envious about in not working locally to the rest of you, is that is a thing that I don't get to participate in.
Yeah, well, if you're ever, like, next time you're in town, we should move the date and make it happen.
Have Tracy's sort of one-shot expendable character showing up in the campaign.
We can make this happen, Tracy. one thing I wanted to note here, because we are going to be looking at diversity and women in tabletop gaming, but the crew that I play with is about even in terms of male to female. In fact, I think it's more female generally. We do get a one-shot player come in sometimes, it shifts the ratio, but on average, it's even.
Yeah, I have three role-playing games that I'm playing in right now. None of them are playing every week. One's every 2 weeks, and the other two are usually once a month. And one of the games, sometimes I'm the only woman at the table. It depends a little bit on who's available that day. One of the others is about a 50-50. And my favorite of the games, not to diss any of the GMs running these games, but my favorite of the game has four players. Only one is a man, and the guy running the campaign is a man. But the fact that the men are in the minority is a nice change of pace in that world for me.
Yeah. And I'm pretty new to the whole thing. This campaign I'm playing with coworkers is the first time I've ever played. So I haven't experienced much outside of that. I have played online since I started this in-person campaign. So that is an option that it's a thing.
Yeah. My husband runs several campaigns that he does exclusively online. And he used to run a local campaign that had mostly local people, but a couple of people who had moved out of state, and they were looped in on Google Hangout or Skype or something similar. So that is a thing that can be done. There are whole tools to let people do that more efficiently and have, you know, little figurines on the screen of where people's characters are and that kind of thing.
Cool. Yeah, we were doing it on Google Hangouts. And I'm a slow typer, and that was my biggest problem I encountered was people would get there before me, and I'd have to retype something else. But if you want to play and maybe doing it in person isn't an option, that is something that you could look into.
Yeah.
What is your history, Tracy, in tabletop gaming? How did you get into it?
Well, when I was a kid, we had some of the standard games that folks often have when they're children at home, like Candyland and Chutes and Ladders and that kind of thing. But it was really my grandmother had two games. They were Monopoly and Battleship. And so my brother and my cousin and I, we were the only three cousins on that side of the family. And every time we went to visit my grandmother, we would play one of those games, although normally, for some reason, it was me and my cousin ganging up on my brother until he would get so mad he would throw the board, which is not a productive way to play a game.
No.
It set the stage, maybe, for later rivalry. Oh. But that was the real starting point. I kind of went on a journey from there that was not so much about tormenting my brother.
Just a little bit.
Maybe sometimes.
Yeah, our work game night, we've banned Monopoly. And I remember distinctly as a child, I've never won a game of Monopoly ever. And I even cheated more than once and still lost.
Monopoly is one of the most maligned games, I think.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things about it is that it's based on a game called The Landlord's Game, which was developed by a woman who was developing this game because she wanted to show the dangers of capitalism. So it actually had two different sets of rules. One set of rules was based on this proposed tax change that was going to be way more equal in the distribution of wealth. And the other was like the monopolist's rule set. And those rules meant that, you know, one person became really, really rich and everybody else lost their money. And the whole idea was to show everybody that was, you know, the danger of capitalism.
Right.
But when later on, first someone stole her idea and then bought her patent for a tiny amount of money, they kept only the rules for the capitalists because it's more fun, I guess, to play that way. Her name was Lizzie McGee. There's a whole story there.
Yeah. I want to play her version of Monopoly.
Yeah, I like the idea of having a version of Monopoly where the whole purpose is that everyone winds up with enough money.
Right. That's almost difficult for me to imagine. I also got into tabletop gaming when I was pretty young, although similar to video games, which I also got into when I was young, I wouldn't have called myself a tabletop gamer until recently, even though it was something I was doing. I just didn't think of it in that way. But when I was little, we had a whole board game closet, and I used to semi-look forward to when the power would go out, because it meant that my whole family would gather in the living room, and we would usually have a fire or candles, and we would play board games. And there was something I loved about, there's no TV, no video games, this is what we're going to do. And it was one of the rare times that we would do something together.
Yeah, I think that's one of the coolest things about most of these games is that I only play them with people I would also just hang out with.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to go play some tabletop games with people who I actively dislike. It's all about spending time together and actually having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Which your wanting the power to go out story reminds me of.
And kind of going off of that, there are some benefits of tabletop gaming. It has a couple of health benefits. It can be a therapeutic activity that is beneficial for teens or children or adults to learn how to socialize. I personally got into D&D last year as a way to help manage my CPTSD. And I also used it to help me figure out the ending of the book I was writing. And I absolutely figured out the ending right away after the first session, I think, because I was playing the main character of the book and I knew what she would do right away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I didn't get into gaming as a way to deal with my anxiety, but universally, if I show up at game night and I am just a ball of anxiety, I feel better by the end.
Yeah.
sometimes it's just that when we are in this fantasy world, there are predictable rules that govern the world, and
yeah,
being there is kind of comforting. And then sometimes it's more like I got to take out my aggression by lighting some evil things on fire.
Yeah, that surprisingly does help release some aggression I've found.
Yeah.
Another thing that it does is playing these games can help promote empathy. It can help kids in the development of memory and cognitive skills like problem solving. I would also say, especially in role-playing games, creativity, storytelling, teamwork, improvisation, adaptability, and confidence. I can say confidence.
Yeah.
That was a big one for me playing D&D in the beginning because I was so nervous about it.
Like, yeah.
I guess my character does this. But it's been like a year and a half now, and I'm very much more like, she throws a bomb at that person.
Yeah. Yeah, that just reminded me of hearing Temple Grandin talk about... Temple Grandin is an animal husbandry expert who is also autistic, and she talked about one of the ways that she really learned to interact with people was that she and her family played games when she was little that involved a lot of rules and a lot of taking turns and a lot of having sort of predictable actions that were mm-hmm. supposed to happen. And that really helped her learn ways to interact with other people.
Yeah, I could see that. Another thing is if you're running the game, which is sometimes called like GM, game mastering, or DM in the case of D&D, Dungeon Master, you can add project management and organizational skills to the mix. I can say, as I'm preparing to do this right now, so much yes. And just trying to predict what a group of very different people is going to do and then knowing in the back of my head that really I can't predict it.
Yeah.
I can try my best.
Yeah.
It is like, I feel like I'm running a project right now.
Yeah. One of the worst tabletop gaming experiences I've ever had was way back in college, where it was everybody's early time. Like, none of us had a lot of experience either playing the game or running the game. It was a whole group of very inexperienced people, but the DM expected us to do something, and we just did not do that thing, and mm-hmm. he was completely unprepared for that eventuality. And then we all died, and then everyone was mad at everyone. And then we just didn't play that again for a while.
Yeah, you had to take a step back. We had a similar experience happen recently where it was kind of like the trolley car problem. We were faced with the fact that either the entire party was going to die or we were going to fail our mission, and the town we were supposed to be saving, they were all going to die. And we chose to save ourselves. And afterwards, we kept kind of mentioning in passing, I can't stop thinking about that village. And it's an imaginary village.
But yeah.
You feel it. You get invested in it.
Yeah, we had a really similar thing in one of the games that I'm playing, which is based on a system called Fate. And in Fate, your characters have different aspects, and you figure out what they are kind of collaboratively, and then your actions in the game a lot of times are connected to them. And we are in this sort of post-apocalyptic world where we have just had a series of, we show up somewhere, a bad thing's happening, we fix the bad thing, but at what cost? Uh-huh. And there was one time when the options were, we fail at doing this or we burn this place down. And without hesitation, we were like, we're just going to have to burn it down. It's the only thing that's going to work.
I think maybe just in case anyone listening is unsure of what is involved in playing like D&D or role-playing game, it's essentially somebody designs a game, or you can find pre-designed games online. And then all the players have a character that they can role play. Some people don't like the actual role playing bit, but you can act as much as you want on there. And then you're in a group and you sort of, it's, I don't know, like a board game, but you're the pieces moving around, and you
yeah.
talk with each other and try to figure out what your character would do, and you get missions like, save a town from a dragon, that sometimes you fail and the whole town gets burned.
It's kind of like when you're a kid and you are playing make-believe with your friends, mm-hmm. but there's a structure to kind
yes.
of guide your collaborative make-believe.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of rule books. There is some, you know, calculation of health points and math involved. And that's one thing, which we'll get into more later, but that's one thing that kept me from it for a while, is because I thought it looked so complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There can be many different types of dice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I asked for dice for my mom last year for Christmas, and she got me, I must have hundreds of dice. She got me way too many. I'm very thankful, but it kind of cracks me up every time. No shortage of dice choices.
Nope.
But if we go back to the possible health benefits, why talking about this matters at all, another thing it can do is reduce stress, sort of what we were talking about before. Unless you're playing something like Monopoly, or I would add Risk. Risk was a very
yeah.
stressful endeavor for me and my siblings growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My husband likes to play a game called Spirit Island, and I love the idea of the game because a lot of games have this setting where it's sort of like you're the colonizers and the goal is to colonize this place. And Spirit Island is the opposite. Like, you are the spirits of this island and you're working with its indigenous inhabitants to drive the colonizers away. And I'm like, I'm on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a game that has so many layers of things going on that I'm also like, this is a little more complex that
right.
I want to spend my fun time on.
Yeah, and that's something that I think people who aren't involved in tabletop gaming might not realize, is there are so many options out there for you. And I have friends who don't or haven't previously liked tabletop gaming because they don't like competition, they're not competitive, stresses mm-hmm. them out. But there are so many games that aren't that way. And we're going to give some recommendations at the end, and one of the ones that I'm going to recommend is, it's like more cooperative.
Yeah, there's a whole genre of cooperative games. And if people watch Parks and Rec and they've seen that episode about the Cones of Dunshire and they think
yeah.
that's what all these games are like there are games that are kind of like the Cones of Dunshire.
Yeah.
A lot of them are way more chill and are more like an elegant but challenging, simple system.
Right. I'd forgotten about the Cones of Dunshire. I was... recently reminded of the 30 Rock version, which is like colonizers of, I don't know, but it's Settlers of Catan.
Yeah,
A 2003 study out of the New England Journal of Medicine linked playing board games with decreased risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. And I just wanted to throw this in here because I thought it was so interesting. Students at Gettysburg College use Clue as a way to practice creating an AI.
Yeah. That's really cool. While we were getting ready for this episode, a thing that I meant to mention earlier was that there's also a study about Mahjong and older people and like people in retirement communities and it helping both with hand-eye coordination and with basically having less stress and more social activity, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. If we look at numbers, it seems that more and more people are getting into tabletop gaming. If you look at the hobby gaming market, which includes collectibles like Pokemon, cards and dice, board games, role-playing games, and miniatures, between 2014 and 2016, sales doubled. Money-wise, that's an increase from $800 million to $1.4 billion. And I do want to mention about miniatures here. So if you're playing something like D&D, you can get these miniatures. They're little figurines, and you can use that to represent your character to move around. And that is another area where you can be. I've seen people do amazing artistic creative stuff. I have my own little miniature. I painted it. It's not great, but I had fun doing it.
I have my one sort of adequately painted miniature. My husband plays some games that are totally based in miniatures, so he has these whole armies of painted miniatures. He finds the painting part really relaxing, and he hasn't been playing them as much recently. And I'm like, we have a whole shelf full of mans over here. Like, you gonna play with them?
They're ready to go. And sort of a way, I think, to see the growth of tabletop gaming is through these board game cafes and bars, which I have seen more and more of. There's Gen Con, which is the largest gaming convention in the United States. It's over 50 years old, and attendance broke records in 2017. Now, I've never been. Have you been, Tracy?
I have not been. I have been to other conventions that have tabletop gaming, like, as a big component. But at about the same time that I had enough interest and enough different types of games that I wanted to go to an event just for that, I also had become way less enamored with giant conventions and a lot happier at smaller events. One of my favorite, not even one of my, my absolute favorite vacation every year is that a bunch of friends rent a big old house out in the Poconos and we go out there for a long weekend and play a bunch of games and like hang out and it's awesome. It's like 35 people. Not 35,000 people.
Much more manageable crowd size.
Yeah.
That
and then
lovely.
Also, if you just want to read a book, nobody's going to bother you. It's fine.
Right. You can step away more easily, should you so desire. If we look at the number of female tabletop gamers, data is difficult to come by. We can safely assume that more women are playing now than previously, as more people are playing in general. At 2016's Gen Con, over half the speakers were women, and that's huge considering that in 2011, only one of the speakers was female.
Which is not enough.
No, no. And I bet some of you will remember this from your social media feeds. A 2015 panel at Gen Con called Writing Women-Friendly Comics at first had no women on the panel.
Yeah. Yeah. Since I know several game developers, many of them are women, and they've been doing this thing where they go and submit a bunch of panels to conventions, and they don't really announce that they are submitting a whole bunch of panels that only have women and non-binary people on them.
Mm-hmm.
They just sneak it in there, and then people show up, and it's a panel that is all women and non-binary folks, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. This is a bunch of women, and they're talking about something besides being women in this space.
Right. Because we can talk about other things.
That is true.
Yes. But that is, at least in my head, and I would guess a lot of people's heads, that's the stereotype if you think of a tabletop gamer. It's a youngish white male.
Yeah. And the conventions I have been to are, like, youngish white males are the largest demographic. Like, not the only demographic, but for sure the biggest one.
Mm-hmm. And there are a few informal surveys out there that suggest people who identify as women make up only 10 to 20% of board game players and that the majority of the respondents in these surveys are white.
Yeah, I always wonder, sort of what we were talking about at the beginning with video games, is how people are defining what counts as a board game player. Yeah. Because a lot of the studies that suggest that men are overwhelmingly the people playing video games are just disregarding the games that are most popular among women.
Right.
And so I kind of wonder if these definitions are including things like party games that women might be playing more than they might be playing, you know, Settlers of Catan, right?
Right.
And maybe so. Maybe yeah. It might be a little closer. I mean, I know as kids, games are for everyone. And then it's in adulthood that suddenly it seems like there is a world of specialty game stores that have a largely often male demographic.
Yeah, and while I was looking into the research for this episode there, it's kind of a new area of academic study. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have been writing about it and are writing about it. And from what I read, several women said, I know that this is the stereotype, but that's not been my experience. I've always had women, people of color playing in my group.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to the people that I personally know and hang out with, but it's not just an overwhelmingly male scene. It's when I get into a gigantic group of people at something like a convention. And I don't think that's totally reflective of who's really playing games.
Right. And I always think in surveys, like the one we're discussing, a lot of times they're self-selecting who's
right.
going to answer that survey.
Yeah.
It might more likely be this type of like yeah. white, young white male. But we do have some more concrete numbers on the development side. The 25 best-selling board games in 2016 were all designed by men, and the 19 nominees for Game of the Year awards between 2014 and 2016, of those, none of them identified as women. And you, Tracy, have put me in touch with some amazing women in the space, and we're going to do a whole follow-up episode on the development side of tabletop gaming.
I'm very excited about that. Those are some of my favorite people. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and say.
Thank you.
Two of them are people I talk to literally every day of my life.
Yes. So excited. We'll follow up with that.
Yeah.
For me, when I first got into tabletop gaming, especially something like D&D, I was very intimidated by it. I remember distinctly being at Dragon Con a couple of years ago, and me and some new friends were discussing what kind of games we enjoyed. And when these new friends of mine, who were all men, asked if I liked tabletop games like D&D, before he'd even finished asking the question, I was like frantically shaking my head. And I have looked back at that moment and tried to get to the bottom of why I felt that way and why I felt so intimidated. And I do think it's because I thought it was something for mostly dudes who wouldn't have the patience to teach me, who wouldn't want to play with me, who might be sexist or mean if I did play with them, and then kind of expect me to just, oh, that's the game, it's fun. And I also thought it'd be really complicated to get into, and it sort of stressed me out, the thought of acting or improvising, even though I'm somebody who does that, like I act and I do improv. For some reason, the idea of having to do it with a group of people really made me nervous. But you don't have to. That is one thing. You can do that stuff to the level of your comfort.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I had a related but slightly different response to the same, not exactly the same perception. Mm-hmm. Because in my college years and early 20s, my gaming life was sort of rooted in some internalized misogyny. Because I had that whole idea that a lot of things that were typically feminine were bad, and that there was some kind of value in being, in quotation marks, not like the other girls.
Right.
So I was mostly hanging out with men, and I was mostly hanging out with men because I sort of felt like somehow women weren't as fun to hang out with. All of this was incorrect. I missed out on like some amazing friendships because yeah. of this like internal baggage. But that meant that I was mostly hanging out with guys, and I was mostly hanging out with guys who were playing a very particular style of board gaming and role-playing games specifically. And it wasn't until I got probably into my 30s that I was like, oh, wait, there is a whole world of games beyond that that is more welcoming to more types of people than what was back there before. And, you know, then I also started working on my whole internalized misogyny problem.
You know, one step at a time. I had a similar thing with video games where I felt like it somehow made me, like I wore it like a badge of honor that I was playing these video games with all men. Mm-hmm. But for me to get into tabletop gaming, I do owe a lot of people, some men, some women, but it sort of felt like it happened all at once that everybody was telling me, you've got to play this board game that I've never heard of, and you got to play this board game that I've never heard of. I don't know if there was just some surge of popularity somewhere, but I owe a lot of friends for introducing me to all of these amazing games and sort of to this whole world that was out there.
Yeah.
And you and I are not the only ones who have felt that tabletop games were not for us. And we'll get into some reasons why after a quick break for word from our sponsor.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snag a Job is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Like a lot of our media, tabletop games do not have the best track record with positive female portrayals and providing diverse characters. Games that have a lesser amount of female characters, if any. We mentioned in our episode around female action figures that Hasbro got in some hot water for leaving the female character Rey out of the newest version of Star Wars Monopoly. And my favorite part of that was their response, she'll be in other games.
Yes, like, that's not a great answer.
We'll put her in a future game. She's not in a here now. And it was, they replaced her with a stormtrooper. It was a character. She's a big character for those that don't know. For her not to be included was a pretty big deal.
Right.
Perhaps there are female characters, but they are overly sexualized or they are relegated to traditionally female, less active roles.
Yeah. It's like you'll have a game that's based on cards with characters drawn on them, and for some reason, the women are all teachers and secretaries.
Right.
Why would that be?
I can't imagine. Or I always love the critique of when armor is so sexualized and clearly that's not going to help you
no.
in a fighting situation. it's kind of a running joke, and yet we still continue to see it. And I will say, I got no problem if you want to, in a game like D&D, create a sexy character. I'm all for it. But if that's like we're seeing this in the official media of the game, then that is a problem.
Right.
Instruction manuals have been called out, too, for using he to refer to all players. And this is improving, but slowly. And we have come a long way, though, because some of the first articles written by playtesters about D&D in the 70s came with gems like this one. There will be four major groups in which women may enter. They may be fighters, magic users, thieves, and clerics. They may progress to the level of men in the area of magic and, in some ways, surpass men as thieves. Elven women may rise especially to high levels and clerics to the elves. Only as fighters are women clearly behind men in all cases, but even they have attributes that their male characters do not. And this article goes on to say that female characters' true strength lies with the beauty part of their charisma score. So D&D, your character has these six ability scores. One of them is charisma. As far as I know, the beauty thing isn't there anymore.
No. Well, and also now women don't, or female characters don't innately get one less strength because they are female.
Right, which is a positive.
Yeah.
But this beauty part of the charisma score that is no longer with us gave women, female characters, abilities such as charm men, seduction, horrid beauty, and worship.
Yeah, we don't need that.
No.
And there were also campaign settings. I mean, you can still go and buy copies of old campaign settings from earlier versions of D&D, and sometimes there are guidelines on how to adapt them to the newest rule system.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find some where it's like, okay, all of the characters who are all presumed to be male walk into this room where there is a siren who is going to charm everybody, and like it's now the bad guy is a woman, and the woman's power is that she's just way too sexy, and yeah.
The newest version did come up as an example of a positive improvement when I was researching this, in that it suggests that players should think outside of the binary box. Essentially, you can create. Whatever character you want to create, doesn't have to be human. It could be all kinds of things. In 2016, the Kickstarter for One Deck Dungeon made $122,000. Its starting goal was $20,000, so way surpassed that. And of note, all of the images of playable characters were of strong, diverse women. But, of course, not everyone was excited about this. Some reviewers on Amazon called the game sexist or labeled it as misandry. It looks cool.
Yes. Well, and we keep seeing that same basic thing play out where something will come along that has an all-female cast and it will break box office records or become a bestseller or whatever. And then there will be this whole conversation of, can women really dominate at the box office?
Yes.
Why do we keep having this conversation?
I know. That is a pet peeve of mine. Back to tabletop gaming. Pasco host Kristen and I went to this Women in Gaming event at the Museum of Design Atlanta a couple of years ago. You can find the video online on YouTube. And it was one of my favorite parts of this whole exhibit was a section on old board games. And of the games that included women, so many of them were women in domestic roles, or women trying to find a husband before the other players. That was how you won, is you found a husband first. One in particular featured all of the jobs that a woman could have in this board game's mind at the time, and they were secretary, teacher, flight attendant, nurse, princess, or ballerina.
All right, then.
Yeah, nothing wrong with any of those occupations, but I feel that women perhaps can do other types of things.
I think possibly, like design games.
Possibly. And we've said it time and time again on this show, but seeing yourself represented is important. That's not even just me saying it. There have been studies that show that bear that out. Not seeing yourself can lead to feelings of disempowerment, invisibility, or insignificance on an individual level, on a community level, and it can lead to decisions made based on who we see or don't see on a societal level. Like, people in power will make decisions based on perceived, like, representation, how they think that must be the truth in society. So if all you're seeing are white men, then you're going to make decisions based on the fact that there are way more white men than there actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, think of all the cool and diverse media that we're missing out on.
There's a lot of it.
There is. There is. And there was this study that you found, Tracy, looking into gender and racial representation when it comes to the illustrators and designers of the top 200 board games as ranked by BoardGameGeek. And it came out like this month, December 2018.
Yeah.
So it's pretty recent.
Yeah, you and I had scheduled this recording and I saw it. I saw people talking about it on Twitter and said, okay, need to bring this up
right
for that episode.
Excellent timing.
Yeah.
And what it found is probably what you might expect. The designers and illustrators were overwhelmingly white men of these 200 games, and that this was reflected in the artwork, which disproportionately is of white men. The numbers on this vary depending on the source, but it also found a majority of the players were also white men. The author does acknowledge the limitation of this work and calls for more research, but it's definitely worth checking out if this is something that is at all of interest to you.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that's drawing from Board Game Geek as a resource.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with that, it's sort of like if you were trying to look at trends in movies based on their where they were ranked on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that would be sort of a comparable thing. So there are a whole lot of movies out in the world that for whatever reason are not up at the top of IMDb. So it gets a little bit of a skewed data set to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But still super interesting.
Yeah. And it references a study that came out a couple of years ago that found that board games are more likely to feature a sheep on the cover than a woman. And this study found that, at least according to the data the study author was looking at, that is true. Aliens and barnyard animals like sheep grace the cover art of board games at a higher rate than women do.
Yeah. Some of those games are great. Like, no.
Oh,
no,
sure.
No criticizing of those games as a thing, but it is a pattern. It's a little disturbing.
Yes. Just a little bit. Something else I found a lot of accounts of online but have never personally run into myself is women running into a lot of misogyny when playing an RPG game like D&D. Male players over-sexualizing the female character that the female player is playing or maybe themselves playing a female character and then over-sexualizing her or making her do stupid things, things like that. And I do know people personally who have lost friends over things like this. I've never experienced it personally, but I do know people that have. There are a couple of bars in Atlanta that do D&D nights where you can drop in and play. And I've done it once. So it's more likely to be strangers that you're playing with. And I had a good time when I did it, but I generally avoid them because I do have this suspicion that I would run into something like that, or people who will pick fights over the rules, or like you said, it's a fun thing, and I think with friends, it's much more relaxed. But I have noticed I've gone out of my way to avoid going to them, even if I think I want to play and I think they could be fun, because I do have this fear that I would run into this thing that we're describing right now.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since I know so many women who develop games, a lot of them go to game conventions all the time and are running games for a ton of people all the time because they're demonstrating their game. And so I've heard a lot of stories about that kind of, you know, either comments that are inappropriate or sexualizing encounters between characters in a game when that's not really necessary.
Right.
And I think because I play almost exclusively with people that I'm already friends with and want to hang out with, I don't really have that experience. The thing that I do have sometimes, even though like most of the guys I know try really hard to be self-aware and to not just steamroll over everyone in the room, especially when I'm at a game where I'm either the only woman at the table or there's only one other woman at the table, sometimes it does feel like the guys are dominating the situation. And normally if we're like, hey guys,
yeah,
we're also here.
Right.
We also can help make the decision of what we're going to do against this monster. They'll be like, all right. So that's a thing. It's a process though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a good point because I have definitely encountered being talked over, interrupted by dudes when I'm playing. And I think it is a combination of me not having the confidence to speak up as loudly as they do, but also, yeah, just kind of a lack of awareness. But I think if you're playing with someone who is new, then maybe keep that in mind, especially if you're running the game, just checking in to see maybe this person just needs a little more encouragement or needs mm-hmm. sort of a push, because I'm a quiet person in general, and a lot of times I'm happy to let other people be the loud ones. But at the same time, if I am trying to say something, I should like to be heard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Several articles I read encouraged dungeon masters, so again, these folks that are running the D&D campaigns, to make sure that they are putting female characters in positions of power in the game that they're designing instead of relegating them to things like barmaid. I've also read plenty of accounts of female DMs facing constant questioning by male players, which does not surprise me at all. I've never mm-hmm. seen it, but I believe it completely. Similarly, several women I was reading accounts about online that they would go into gaming stores and almost immediately would be asked if they were shopping for their boyfriend, if they needed any help, the assumption that a woman couldn't possibly be there for herself.
Yeah. When I lived in Asheville, there was a place that I went that was a combination games, comics, and music store. And the first few times that I went in there, the assumption was that I was there for the music, which sometimes I was mm-hmm. there for the music, but I was also there for the comics and the games.
Yeah.
And I remember at one walking in, I mean, this has been well over a decade ago, so like, don't go find that place and yell at them. But I remember walking in at one point and somebody being like, the music's over there. And I was there to pick up my weekly pulls of my comic books. It's like, it's not good.
No, I've definitely experienced that in the realm of comics too, and I've spoke about it on the show before, but what really bothers me is once you sort of pass this test and proved that, oh yes, I do read these things, then I almost always would get asked out. Is this your only, she reads comic books. Sometimes I would just start pretending, like, no, this isn't for me. To be left alone. Another thing we have to talk about, unfortunately, is sexual harassment. In 2014, a Canadian tabletop gamer named Emily Garland posted a piece on Tumblr called Tabletop Gaming Has a White Male Terrorist Problem. And as you can imagine from the title, it got a lot of attention.
I remember when this came out.
Do you?
Yeah.
I do not remember it.
Yeah. Well, and I remember in a good way, a lot of the men in my life passing it around amongst themselves, like, guys, this is a problem that we need to proactively be handling. So go on.
Yeah, that's great. She wrote in this Tumblr post, white male terrorism is the white underbelly of the gaming community meant to terrify and disrupt the lives of those who threaten the status quo by race, gender, or sexuality. And you can find the article online if you want to read it. It's pretty upsetting, but it is worth a read. She identifies three main concerns: sexual harassment, exclusion of women who are vocal about marginalization and unfair treatment, and a failure of the tabletop gaming industry as a whole to speak out about things like Gamergate. And she won a sexual harassment lawsuit against a gaming store that she worked in that same year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not a pleasant read at all.
No, it is not. Definitely know that going in, but it's worth reading, especially if you're somebody that is a part of the tabletop gaming community, I would say. Mm-hmm. Check it out. And something I saw in a lot of places that so often the response to all of this, everything we're talking about, is but from people who don't want the community to change, go play something else. If it bothers you, don't make this fun hobby political. But it's about making this fun hobby and beneficial activity more inclusive and better for everybody. And in light of that, we have some recommendations and resources for you. But first, one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. And we're back with some game recommendations. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I love Pandemic. And this
is so good.
It's so good. And it's hard, and I love it. There's like 8 ways to lose and only 1 way to win. And it's cooperative, too. Like we were saying in the beginning, some people who don't like competition, you are competing against the game. It's pretty tense. I'm not going to like sugarcoat it. But you aren't competing against your friends.
Right. Your friends are working with you to try to stop the illness.
Yes. One thing I love about this game is... a lot of times when I'll have people over and we have all this entertainment available to us, friends of mine who aren't that into tabletop gaming in general will request that we play Pandemic. It is like a fun crowd pleaser. It has an equal number of male to female characters who aren't sexualized. They're dressed appropriately for their job. And the jobs are things like scientists and quarantine specialists. It's so fun. And you can play it with just 2 players, too. That's another thing I love about it.
I have lost it spectacularly with just 2 players.
I have, too. I once, like, we were doing fine And I don't want to go too much in the mechanics here, but basically we drew one card and we went from fine to we lost.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this was like three turns into the game and we just had really bad luck. And it was like this outbreak has spread and the world is over. I think one of the mechanics is you have these little black cubes that represent the illness. Mm-hmm. And if you run out of them,
right,
game over.
Yes.
And we ran out of them in just an amazingly short amount of time.
Yeah. And I have lost. There are these like little tiny cubes and I've lost one. And the game, the difficulty level is such that it comes close enough that I made a note saying, I am missing one of these cubes. One. So if that's what it comes down to... I want everyone to know that you have one cube that is not there.
Yeah. I gotta have a couple caveats with the one that I'm gonna recommend next, because it is based on Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. It's called Marrying Mr. Darcy. It's a card game. Since it is based on Pride and Prejudice, all the characters are white, and the goal of the game is to marry the right person. So... like, let's just get that out on the table. However, it has the same sense of humor that Jane Austen's writing does. So it's a card game, and the cards have just these very wry, witty instructions of what's going on in the game. You also do not have to get married in order to win the game. It is completely possible to win the game by not getting married. And it's accessible to people even if they have no familiarity with Jane Austen. So when I very first moved to Massachusetts, my husband, who at that time was my boyfriend, had gone out of town, and I didn't really know many people here very well yet. And this friend of his said, come over and play games with us. And I was like, I'm going to take Marrying Mr. Darcy, because I thought when he said us, he meant me and my wife. But what he really meant was me and these two other dudes. So it became me and these three dudes playing a game based on Pride and Prejudice. And everybody had a great time. So
that sounds wonderful.
It was great.
My friends would love that game for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I totally get why, like, people might not be into the idea of playing a game where all the characters are white and the goal is to get married. Like, I get, like, that might not be for you, but if that's for you,
yes,
then it's probably really for you. I have another one that is a lot more diverse in its representation, and it is called the Tea Dragon Society Card Game, and it's based on a graphic novel by Katie O'Neill that is called The Tea Dragon Society, and that graphic novel is full of LGBTQ characters and characters of color, and this is another card game where your goal is to raise these little tea dragons, and the dragons are adorable, and the art is adorable, and the characters, the more humanoid characters, one of them is not strictly human, but they are also adorable, and even if you're not playing with little kids, I think the age range is 10 and up. If you are into the idea of taking care of some adorable little dragons, you can be a room for like a table full of adults and it will still be great.
One that my friends love is called Dixit, which I describe as apples to apples, but with beautiful art. And again, this is this group of friends particularly that loves it. They don't really like tabletop games in general. They don't like the competitive aspect of it. But they love this one, and they love the art of it. And it's real. I find it really funny because I get frustrated playing with them. I also get frustrated playing apples to apples because I'm very competitive. Mm-hmm. And I'll get angry if I can't see what you're seeing. Like, explain to me how that represents being lost, please.
Yeah.
But they all love it.
And both Dixit and apples to apples can be really interesting to play when you either know everyone at the table really, really well,
oh,
or
yeah,
when you don't know everyone at the table really, really well. Because if you know two people and you don't know everyone else, then like you might know enough about how that person thinks, mm-hmm, to figure out what they're doing,
right,
a lot more easily.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I've known this group of friends since elementary school, and for some reason I can't get a beat on what they're seeing when they're looking at these beautifully the art is really beautiful with that game.
It is. It's beautiful and kind of abstract.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I also love Betrayal at the House on the Hill, which is a game where your group explores a haunted house together, and about halfway through, you trigger a haunt, and depending on a couple of circumstances, one of the players becomes a traitor, and you're sort of working against that player, and then whatever demon, haunt, whatever it is that they're working with. And there's something like 60 scenarios.
So, Annie.
Yes.
Do you know about Betrayal Legacy?
I do, but only a little bit. Tell me about it.
I can tell you about it because I playtested that game.
Did you really?
I did. I am listed in the credits.
Oh my gosh. I'm like so excited about this.
Oh, I am really excited too. I had actually been like, should I talk about Betrayal?
Yes.
Should I talk about Betrayal Legacy? And then you went and put it on the list. I'm so excited. Okay, so what Annie just said. That's still the basic mechanics. You have a haunted house that you're exploring, and something happens that triggers a haunt, and somebody who is playing with you becomes a traitor. And the Betrayal Legacy works the same way that other legacy games do, which is that as you play, the game itself changes. So you might have, like, the first time you play, this is made up, I'm not spoiling anything in the game, but, like, the first time you play, a particular character dies in a particular room. Well, that room might now, the next time you play, have something different about it because that happened in that room the last time. And so it is, I think, 13 chapters. Each chapter takes place in a different year. So you're in this haunted house through time. And then once you get all through those 13 sort of foundational games, there is a replay mode where you can play all of these other scenarios in the same game. So because it's a horror game, it does have some, you know, some of the same horror tropes that I think some people might not enjoy. Like if you're not going to enjoy a game that has a bunch of murder in it, then
right.
Maybe not this one for you. But if you are into horror movies and horror books and settings that are full of ghosts and monsters and scary things, then I highly recommend it.
Oh, yeah. I have to check out Legacy now. I've been wanting to, but now I've got to. I'm going to add it
to
our rotation at game night here. And that is the perfect launching point for our next section, which is resources, because recently we did play Betrayal at the House on the Hill, and it's kind of a rule here, and it also just kind of makes sense that if it's your game, then you're the one that sort of explains it, makes sure it runs smoothly. It's my game, and people voted to play it, but I hadn't played it in a while. So I wanted to brush up on the rules, and one of the first things I did was I got online and watched the Tabletop with Will Wheaton episode on playing Betrayal at House on the Hill to refresh my memory. And this is an online video series. I watch it on YouTube where people play tabletop games. A lot of times they're celebrities. And it sounds boring, I know, but it's usually pretty entertaining. And it's just good to see people actually playing it, because reading the instructions can feel really dense, especially on a game like Betrayal at the House on the Hill. Mm-hmm. And seeing it kind of play out, for me at least, is very helpful.
Yeah, I have found that very helpful for seeing how the game is played when there's not somebody experienced around to tell you how the game is played. And then it can be super entertaining. Sometimes the things that happen as they are playing are hilarious.
Yeah. I seem to recall when they were playing Ticket to Ride.
That's the story I was going to tell.
I guess it's well known among the tabletop viewers.
I remember it vividly. I think it's one of those, like, this disaster happens in the middle of the game, and then there is a slow motion replay of the disaster.
Yes. Well, go check out the episode on Ticket to Ride if you want to find out what that disaster was. On top of that, there's so many things out there, so many things. There's podcasts, Twitch channels, YouTube shows. You've got Becca Scott over at the Twitch channel Game the Game, Brittany Bowe or Bebo over at GameWire, Board Game Breakfast on the YouTube channel, The Dice Tower. The amount of content out there on D&D alone is staggering. So there are, if you're intimidated or you feel like you would just, you would feel better if you had visual examples or just hearing people talk about playing, there's stuff for you out there.
Yeah. And if just watching or listening to someone's role-playing campaign sounds interesting to you, there are options for that too.
Yes, there are. I've thought about, I don't want to turn it into work as a thing, but I've thought about recording our D&D sessions with our office campaign just because.
Yeah.
They are quite interesting.
I've thought about pitching some kind of RPG podcast. And because I have had too much other podcast work to do, that's never right. been a thing that's come to fruition.
I would be so into that. There's also Contessa, which is a nonprofit founded in 2012 to make the tabletop gaming space for marginalized folks more diverse and providing a space for them to run games. So if you're interested in running a game, you can check them out or in getting involved in this at all. They have a lot of opportunities around that. So I feel like we're about at the end of this exploration into tabletop gaming.
I think so.
To wrap things up, there's a lot of things going on in the world of tabletop gaming, and there are clearly areas where the industry can improve. And it makes me sad that people have been turned away from something that can be so fun and perhaps physically and mentally beneficial because they didn't feel welcome. So I'm really hoping that will change and that maybe somebody listening to this who's been interested in it but hasn't done it for one reason or the other, maybe this episode has inspired you to go check it out.
Yeah. Even if you are not really into the idea of going to a gigantic convention and spending the whole weekend there, a lot of times the people that actually develop these games are working on the dealer's floor at booths, like with their games to personally show you how to play, or somebody that they know really well is going to personally show you how to play the game. So at least doing a walkthrough and seeing what games are being played and what looks fun can be really awesome.
Yeah, because as we said, there are so many games out there, all kinds of games that you may be unaware of, but there are options. And we will follow up with an episode about the development aspect of gaming. So look out for that. In the meantime, thank you so much, Tracy, for joining us. This has been such a lovely conversation.
Thank you. I've had a really good time.
Yeah, I really want to play some games now.
We got to go back to work, though.
Alas. Where can people find you, Tracy?
Well, I co-host Stuff You Missed in History Class with Holly Fry. And so the easiest way to get me is at the Stuff You Missed in History Class email, which is historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. And then we're all over social media at Missed in History. I'm also personally on Twitter, but I'm often not looking at my mentions.
Yeah, I'm the same.
So, yeah, sometimes I'll see that somebody has said something, like asked me a question or said something nice, and I'm like, oh, I did not. That was a week ago. Whoops.
Yeah, I really have to build myself up to go on social media. I do. Don't let that deter you from contacting me, but it's like a once a week, here we go type situation. Yeah.
I spend a lot of time just scrolling to the top of the Twitter feed and being like, what's happening right now? Okay, putting this away.
Right. You can also email this show at momstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can find us on Twitter at momstuffpodcast and on Instagram at stuffmomnevertoldyou. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Andrew Howard, and thanks to you for listening.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.